It's KOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. Seattle filmmaker Wes Hurley grew up in Vladivostok, Russia. It was kind of like San Francisco.
San Francisco, if it was like post-apocalyptic, horrible, I probably can't swear, but not a good place.
But Wes Hurley will give this to Vladivostok. It did help inspire his new short film, Little Potato. It's about his life growing up gay in Russia, and his mom struggled to get the two of them to America. And it makes sense that Hurley makes movies now, because movies were a lifeline for him and his mom in Vladivostok. Hollywood movies in particular. They were hard to find until Hurley discovered a secret TV channel that showed nothing but American blockbusters.
So this was really exciting. For as long as I could remember, we had just two channels, and there were government channels, and the most exciting thing that you could see on them was maybe soccer once in a while. Most of the time it would just be like news about productivity on farm, 1987 is up, you know, stuff like that, or an old guy playing on a piano all day. Like, that was the television. So all of a sudden we heard this rumors that, like, you know, you have to check out channel number 3 late at night. And everybody was like, what? There's no channel number 3. And so I came home. I remember I was really excited, but kind of, you know, skeptical. And turned on the dial. It was like old black and white TV with the dial to channel 3. And there was the movie Ghost, which was just like most exciting movie I've seen at that point. It was so dreamy. And from then on, everybody was obsessively watching channel number 3.
In English?
Well, what they did was, for some reason, they didn't really do subtitling in Russia. What they did was they had this one guy, or maybe it was several guys, who would dub them, and they would dub all the characters. So it's it's kind of a strange way to watch a movie, but that's, you know, that's the only way we've watched American movies, so we kind of took it for granted that that's how it is. But
so the same guy as Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore.
Same guy, and they would like cover their, basically plug their nose, to supposedly to disguise their voice, because they were, you know, they were pirated movies that were not supposed to be licensed in Russia or whatever. I don't know if, you know, I don't know if that was the reason, but they all kind of had nasally.
It's voice acting. Nasally. It's characterization.
And they were great, actually. I mean, they were really good translators. They really captured the humor and
you loved
it. Of language. We loved it. We were so into it. And, you know, the more we watched, the more just sort of this other world emerged for us.
Why were American movies that important to you and your mom?
Well, for basic survival, it's like escapism that allows you to go on another day and kind of see a better life somewhere. You know, before we even got the secret Renegade Channel number 3, where we saw American movies, we would sort of pass American movies down as an oral tradition almost, where, you know, like a friend of a friend would see like Total Recall or Terminator or Pretty Woman, and they would retell it to somebody, and then somebody would retell it to somebody else. And so the first few movies, American movies, I actually heard that way instead of seeing on screen. And then you finally get to see it, and it's so exciting. You know, it's even more exciting.
I imagine every culture has a culture of storytelling. Is there something different about an American-style story than you'd ever heard?
I think part of it is we had, you know, the early Soviet cinema is very, it's all propaganda. It's all like, kind of like Hollywood films in style, but rah-rah communism. And they're really dumb, of course, and nobody wanted to see them. And so when, I believe Khrushchev is the one to sort of liberalize the movie industry a little bit. And so suddenly filmmakers could speak the truth, and they sort of went overboard almost. Every film was about how hopeless life is. I think filmmakers were just like so happy to talk about how things are, but they, in a way, you need balance. You know, you need art that shows you how things are and what needs to be fixed, but you do need stuff that, you know, that's not so gloomy. You need stuff that shows you how things could be and the world can be a better place and just helps you survive during hard times. I mean, that's another function of art, I think. And, you know, it was like, oh, happy, happy, happy place. Yes. We want to be in a happy place.
Please, a little fantasy with the realism, okay? A little of, yes, Tinkerbell's dust.
Exactly.
And movies sounded like became real important to your mom.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It's a funny story. I remember she dated this guy for a while who was kind of a loser. She, the only reason she dated him is because he had a color TV and a VCR. And he would, you know, come back and break up and come back and break up. And she always took him back even though she didn't like him. And the whole time she was saving up money. And so finally she bought a VCR. And I remember he came back and she's like, I have my own VCR. Like, I'm not taking you back.
He took one look at that machine. He knew it's over. We're talking with Seattle-based filmmaker Wes Hurley about his short autobiographical film, Little Potato. What were your hopes for America for you?
Well, I knew, or I knew I wouldn't be drafted in the military. I knew that I would have a chance to maybe do other things with my life. You know, in Russia, you don't really have a lot of choice. When I was growing up, you didn't have a lot of choice about what you're going to do in life. So basically the only jobs that you can get are jobs that your family is connected to somehow. So you can't just go to school and learn whatever you want to learn and pursue that. It's just not an option. So that's a big thing, you know, just being in a place that doesn't feel like the end of the world, basically.
So dreary.
And then in some way also being gay, you know, played into it. I didn't really exactly know what the situation was in America or anywhere, but in Russia, it really felt like I was the only gay person, you know. I logically knew that I wasn't, but I wasn't out. No, there's no way that I could be out.
Right.
And I imagine I would just be killed the next day, you know. Considering all the things that I heard every day about gay people and how they're basically this monsters that didn't even seem real. I don't think anybody knew any gay people. It was just this mythological monstrosity. You know, the worst thing that you could possibly be.
So how did you get to Seattle?
So yeah, my mom became pen pals with an American guy. They hit it off and then they got married. And so he brought her over and then brought me over as well.
What was Seattle in reality like for you?
It was incredible. It was like better. It was as good as the movies, but better because it was real.
Oh, yeah.
Although it didn't seem real. I mean, when I talk to my mom, like neither of us feels like it's real still to some degree. You know, it still feels like we're living in a fantasy dream that we're going to wake up back in Russia.
And that was about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
What do you remember?
I just remember, well, I remember people being, you know, friendly. And where I grew up, people are always like angry, scowling. Everywhere you go, people are very just angry.
So when we say we have the Seattle freeze here, we have no idea.
No idea, no. I mean, people look at you like they're going to murder you.
in Russia.
Bus, yeah. I mean, anywhere you go. And here, you know, when I saw people like smiling at you, it took me a moment to be like, oh, they're not crazy. Like people actually smile if, you know, if your eyes connect and, you know, they say hi. And that was, it's a silly little thing. And I know it's not like, you know, some people would say, oh, it's not genuine. Like people don't really care. But actually it makes a big difference in day-to-day life when you're like surrounded by that energy instead of like murderous, angry, depressed looks everywhere. You know, and then going to the stores, for example, as cheesy as that sounds, and I'm not even, now I don't care now that I've been here 20 years, but like coming from Russia and going to a store and seeing everything, like all bazillion types of cheese, for example. We only had one type of cheese, like growing up. I thought cheese was just one thing.
Yeah.
I didn't think there were, you know, there was like options for different kinds of cheese. So
you would just, someone would say, hey, there's cheese.
There's cheese, yeah. And there was this cheese that could kind of, you know, it looked kind of like a cross between cheddar and Swiss. It was kind of whitish yellow. And that was the only cheese. So to be in a grocery store and see all those things, it was just like strange. Like, I don't know, like kids in Willy Wonka and Chocolate Factory. That's how we
feel. Yeah.
You know, and again, gay thing, you know, starting to see that people, you know, gay people were treated like people. And even if there's discrimination, it's not like people consider you subhuman or, you know, you should be killed for being gay, you know. So that was a radical reality for me to be in this kind of environment where you're suddenly a human being, you know, even if I was the only one to know that I was gay, it still, you know, it still affects you.
Do you remember a moment when that dawned on you? I was seeing a couple
gradually.
Holding hands or something?
It was definitely gradual. It took, you know, and once I realized that I still had, you know, I needed time to like accept it. Like I still, only recently do I feel comfortable like holding hands in public, and I don't think about like physical confrontation at the same time. Because that used to be for me, like I would just not be comfortable holding hands in public because I would feel like everybody's looking at me and they're gonna try to physically hurt me. You know, it's not just a matter of like judgment, it's a matter of like survival.
Well, what a story, little potato. We've just peeled the outer skin. What do you want to leave us with after all you've been through and now you've made a story about it on screen?
I just wish more Americans would not take our democracy for granted and not just vote, but actually educate themselves and just be more involved. And it seems like that's sort of is happening to some degree. There's a lot more movement now with Trump in the White House, so maybe that's a good thing. But yeah, that's my big thing is to live in a place where like I'm basically the first generation of my family to be able to vote in an actual election. Like for me to see people in the States that have this incredible democracy that has potential to really work beautifully and not engage with it, or, you know, just be lazy and be like, oh, I don't have a candidate that I love, I'm just not going to engage. Like that is so offensive and outrageous to me. So my hope is that people get more engaged.
That was Wes Hurley, the co-director of the short film Little Potato, an autobiographical look at Hurley's life growing up gay in Russia with his mother and their struggle to make it to America. The movie has won the Grand Jury Award at South by Southwest. And now Hurley and his co-director Nathan Miller are hoping to turn it into a full-length film. And we'll be tweeting out a clip so you can watch a little bit of Little Potato. Join us at KUOW.